If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
100 days, 100 nights, but no woman's heart. 100 days, 100 nights, but no woman's heart. And a little more before he knows it's gone.
Thank you, Susan. John Williams, this is WGN Radio. Sharon Jones, 100 days, 100 nights. 60 is too young. Seems like these things come in waves, don't they? A series of notable stars and singers, it seems to be, in the last week or so have died and have died too soon. On the show in this hour, Tim Walsh, a friend of ours, he used to come on the radio on WGN with us a lot, particularly around this time of year, and talk about, sell, push, promote his games Blurt and Tribond. Do you remember those? They are still fun, and you've got them in the game closet at home, you might want to dust those off. But he's got a new game out, and he's at the Game and Toy Convention at Navy Pier. You could go there right now. It's the largest of its kind in the country. It's open to consumers. You can try these things out. It sounds like a fun way to spend some time, especially with all that's going on downtown this weekend. So if that's on your list of to-dos today and tomorrow, it runs most of the day. And then in the next half hour, some of our Mincing Rascals podcast we broadcast on Saturdays, at least when I'm on in the 1 o'clock hour. And today we are. The Mincing Rascals is the podcast that we record on Fridays. You can hear it at WGNplus.com. You can follow it on Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, the podcast was pretty good this week because, you know, for the last year, it's been very political, and we've been talking about Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, et cetera, et cetera. But the gang kind of got at it this time about Illinois state politics, the budget impasse, and it was really interesting, the, let's call it, conversation that Kristen McQuarrie and Eric Zorn had. You'll hear part of that, and you can hear the whole podcast if you're following it, or maybe just open up a browser and go to WGNplus.com. And a word or two for my friend Thomas Jefferson. It's kind of funny. I mean, it's been so long since we spoke, but we did a TJ show not that long ago in the Chicago area, and it was terrific. You'll hear portions of that broadcast on Thanksgiving Day here on WGN. So Tim Walsh is on the phone line right now. Hey, Tim, it's John Williams. How are you? Good afternoon.
John, how are you?
Long time no talk. Tim Walsh is from, I think, Florida these days, correct?
That is correct, Sarasota.
Yeah. You're in Chicago for the Toy and Game Fair at Navy Pier. It goes till 6 today and then 10 to 5 tomorrow. You used to come on the radio with us all the time with your games Blurt and Tribond. You've got a new game out. Is that right now, Tim?
Well, it's not quite out yet, but we're showing it here. It's called Linkum.
Linkum. Okay. I'll bite. So is this like a, I mean, is the game already set and done and it's going to have its future and it's going to be successful or not? Or is this like a trial run where you tweak it depending on what you hear from people at this fair?
Well, that's the trial by fire here because this is the only show that's open to the public. So what a lot of people do is they bring their new toy inventions and sort of see if people like them or not. It's like a giant focus group, but the kids just know that they're playing games that aren't even on the market yet and get to see new things before they're even out.
Hmm. Is it games or is it toys also?
Everything. Games, toys, anything to do with play, really. We've got a Star Wars breakfast happening here where all these cosplay Star Wars characters, you can get your photograph with Darth Vader and all that. There's laser tag and a lot of hands-on stuff for kids.
All right, so your game is called Linkum. Can you kind of explain it to me or can you and I try and play a little of it on the radio?
Yeah, sure. You get two things that are linked by one word. So I'll give you an example. Frosted Flakes feline meets the world's most famous golfer.
Tony Tiger Woods.
Nice, John. So you get it. You get it. Yes. How about a 70s?
I'm not good at this 70s game. I can. That was luck. Griff, do you want to turn on your microphone and play against me here? All right. So you're going to give me another one here?
Yeah, here you go. Two things. You got to link them together. 70s tennis champ meets skyscraper climbing ape.
A King
70s
Kong.
Tennis champ.
Billy King Kong. Billy Jean King Kong.
Yes, that's it. So if you get the second one, but you don't know the first one, you can do it, which I think you did.
Yeah.
You get King Kong first, and you go, what tennis player do I know that ends with King? Yes, so you're getting it. I like it. How about Paul Newman's prison movie?
Right.
Meet the son of Darth Vader.
Okay, Cool Hand Luke cool Skywalker. Hand
Ha.
Took me a minute. I'm here now, though.
Okay, I've got two right. Griff's got one right. But really, Griff wasn't here for the first one. So, all right, do it again.
Chubby Bill Cosby cartoon meets E equals MC Square author.
Einstein.
Fat Albert Einstein.
Yes.
I watched five episodes of Jeopardy in a row with some friends a couple nights ago. I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Really? I mean, but I don't know if this is the same part of the brain, Tim, what we're tapping here. Clearly, I don't have that part either way. But, I mean, because I guess it requires knowledge and speed. Okay. Try another one, Tim. Let me see if I can beat Griff on this one.
All right. How about the lead singer of Hole meets Gavin McLeod's cruise ship?
Oh,
love
man.
Love boat. Courtney Love boat.
No. Courtney Love boat.
Okay. Okay, do one more. This is addictive. Okay, do another one. I want to do one more.
All right. Goldie Hawn's acting daughter meets the water off Manhattan's west side.
The water off Manhattan's.
West side. Goldie Hawn's acting daughter. The water off Manhattan's west side.
Kate Hudson River.
Nice.
Yeah.
Given enough time, I would have come to that, but it would have been a long time because that's the thing where I'm going, oh, yeah, who's that actress? I can see her face.
Yeah, you don't get a day to study. It's not homework.
No, it's fun. So this game is called Link'em. And what is it? Yeah. I hold up a card, read the clue, and then people do it for time? Or how does that work?
Yeah, it's just that if you get it right first, you collect the card, and then the first one to get, 15 cards wins. It's kind of an open-ended party game, but...
It's not
on the market yet, so you heard it here first.
Well, how and when and where will people be able to get the game, Tim?
Hopefully in the spring. We've had a good feedback here so far, so we're going to go ahead and produce it. So it should be done,
yeah.
I'm hoping, in April.
Well, here's a focus group of two. I think it's a hit. I don't know. I got $20. What are you going to see? What is a game like that going to cost me? $39.99 maybe, huh?
Well, we're actually trying to get it out for $14.99 because games are more popular than ever. It's interesting. It's cyclic. As we've spoken over the years, John, games are kind of ebb and flow, and they're really popular now. Barnes & Noble is really doing a good job of expanding the interest in board games.
No kidding. And are you speaking about the physical board games or digital games?
I'm speaking about the physical ones. It's interesting that the book sales are down because people can download a book, but you still can't download a physical board game. So they've expanded their stores and a lot of other bookstores as well to include more physical board games. So it's good for our industry, certainly.
I got to tell you, I was on a cruise not that long ago with 150 WGN listeners and some from another radio station I work at, WCCO. But everybody on the ship, this AMA Waterways cruise that we did down the Danube, was a listener of mine, and it was really cozy and fun. This is the first time I've had a chance to say hi to all my old and new friends from that. It was really spectacular. And a highlight for me was a friend of mine, Sue Cox, said, let's play cards. And she brought a couple decks, and we played this gin rummy style game. And I haven't sat down and played cards with people in a very long time. It was really fun. You know what I mean? I don't know what's going on out there, but the idea of sitting down and playing a game like you've invented here, Link'em, sounds fun to me. I'm glad we haven't lost that.
Yeah, well, we have a concern for the next generation. I have a friend who's a corporate recruiter, and he deals with a lot of very sharp young people coming out of college, and they're losing the ability to make eye contact and communicate because they're so used to texting and communicating in a different way. But we still need face-to-face communication in our country and our culture and the world. So I think board games serve that purpose as well, is to get people face-to-face again.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, literally, think about that. You're right. You also co-authored a book called Right Brain Red, correct? Okay, what's that about?
The inventor of Nerf, the Nerf ball, and the inventor of the Twister game by Milton Bradley is the same man. And he is a mentor of mine, great guy. He also entered the music publishing business in the 80s and has a Grammy and multiple number one hits in the country world. And he also has a learning system that teaches dyslexics how to read. So he's been wildly successful in three different careers, and he asked me to help him put his thoughts together. So this is a book on ways that you can be more creative and ideas that he's used to be quite successful in toys, education, and the music field. So pretty amazing guy.
What is his name?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that would be good. It's Ren Geyer. Ren Geyer is his name.
Funny how you just kind of dismiss that. You just brush him aside. It's all about you, isn't it, Tim? So he invented Twister. Tell me the story of Twister.
He was working at a promotional company, and he had an idea for a mail-in shoe polish promotion where the people were the playing pieces on a giant floor mat. And that had never been done before, where people actually are the playing pieces in a game. And he thought, maybe this is a game. And they called it Pretzel. They licensed it to Milton Bradley, who, by the way, in 1966 said, this might be a little too risque. You know, you're not supposed to climb over top of people. It's socially inappropriate. And then Sears looked at it and said, yeah, inappropriate. We're not going to buy it. But they had sent a game to Johnny Carson. And on May 3rd, 1966, Johnny Carson played Twister with Ava Gabor, and the sight of an embarrassed Johnny reaching over Ava to get, you know, right-hand red sent the studio audience into hysterics. And guess what? Sears changed their mind and decided to buy, and they sold $3 million that year.
Twister. So right-hand red was sometimes a move you'd have to make in the game. The book is Right Brain Red and tells that story.
Yes, you spin the spinner and you have to put your right foot or left foot, right hand or left hand on one of four colors. So simple, but they have sold over 45 million Twister games in about 30 countries.
Wow. I love these stories, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Tim Walsh, so Blurt, Tribond, now something called Link'em, L-I-N-K, apostrophe E-M, Link'em Up. Link'em is a game that he's invented. That'll be available in the spring. You'll have to come on with us when it's available in stores, and you can also find his book, Right Brain Red. He's at the Chicago Toy and Game Fair at Navy Pier. It runs until 6 tonight and 10 to 5 tomorrow. You get to touch, feel, play, see these things. What a fun idea. Hey, Tim, I'm going to let you go, but congratulations and good luck to you.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. Thanks for playing.
It's Tim Walsh. It's 224. Some interesting things happening in the Twitter sphere this week. Have you noticed? A couple of them in a minute here on WGN.
So many times there was a man, he met a girl and took her hand. He told her, never will I leave you, my love. But just as soon as he's born again, she's a flapping in the wind, wondering what she must have been thinking of.
Yeah, we need to play Sharon Jones for the rest of the show. It's a short one today, but she's due. And at 1 o'clock, we started the show. We go all the way until 2 o'clock, then Northwestern football here on WGN. I'm John Williams. I just have to tell you, I've been following the news this week. You have too. And it appears as though the president-elect is not going to stop tweeting. And I guess we all just have to get used to that. It's already weird, and it's going to stay weird when the president, who will have an official spokesperson and, you know, traditional means of communicating, will still be tweeting his own thoughts, his own digs. And if you voted for Donald Trump, you're probably going to just love this. And if you did not, you're just going to have to accept that this is who this guy is and how he talks. So, for instance, this week, when the Ford Motor Company said that they're going to move the production of Lincoln MLKs to a Louisville plant or keep producing them there, Donald Trump took credit for saving the plant in Kentucky. PolitiFact gave that, or Fact Check, one of them gave that three Pinocchios. They said the plant wasn't going to go anywhere. They'd invested about $1 billion in that. But there was Donald Trump crowing that he had sort of saved for the people of Kentucky the Ford plant. And even if he had, you might just, even if you're a supporter of his, wish that he wouldn't brag about every little accomplishment, particularly when it's imagined, about the New York Times, whose coverage of the presidential election has been, let's say, debated. It's been controversial. Did they do a good job or bad job? Donald Trump was on Twitter this week saying that their subscriptions are down. That's not true. About Trump University, he's now bragging that while he is settling for $25 million, that's just a fraction of what it could have been. So this was a good deal for him rather than them. You almost get the feeling that he forgot that he won the election. He doesn't have to campaign anymore. And these citizens aren't all his enemies. So then there's Mike Pence, who goes to the Hamilton show last night at on Broadway. And when he walks in, people were booing and cheering. To be honest with you, I watched the video, and I think I saw and heard more cheering for Mike Pence, the vice president-elect, when he walked in than the other way around. Anyway, afterwards, the cast stood there, and the man that portrays Hamilton said to him, "We appreciate your being here. We have a few things we want to say." And then he spoke for about a minute and a half, and he said, "You know, this is a broad, diverse country, and we wish that you wouldn't have, we want you to be mindful of all America." That was the general message. And Pence was walking out. They say he heard the entire message, but maybe more in the vestibule or hallway in the theater. Anyway, Donald Trump, the the president-elect, says, "Our wonderful future VP Mike Pence was harassed last night at the theater by the cast of Hamilton. Cameras blazing. This should not happen!" Exclamation point. And then, 8 minutes later, he tweeted, "The theater must always be a safe and special place. The cast of Hamilton was very rude last night to a very good man, Mike Pence. Apologize!" Exclamation point. There's the president-elect tweeting out to those people, "Apologize!" Exclamation point. It's very strange. And that's just the way, don't you get the feeling, it's going to be. The Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. Okay, thank you, Bob. By the way, good to hear your voice. You and I haven't talked for a while. You've been well? Everything good in the Kessler world?
I've been well. The Kessler world's a good world.
Yeah, and everybody, I guess, is looking forward to tonight, 5:30. You were talking about it. The Magnificent Mile Lights Festival will kick off the parade at 5:30 this evening. Pioneer Court is busy with the market there, and the skating rink is open at Millennium Park. So enjoy Chicago. So listen to this. A budget meeting was set for Monday of this week between the governor and legislative leaders. House Speaker Mike Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton did not show up at that Monday meeting. The next day they did, Tuesday, for what Tribune columnist and editorial writer Kristen McQuarrie described as an unproductive meeting. About their inability to get to the first meeting the first day on Monday, McQuarrie wrote, "What could be more important to Madigan and Cullerton than trying to resolve a budget impasse that is harming Illinois citizens? Their hubris, that's what." Now, in a column yesterday, Eric Zorn, her colleague at the Tribune, said that in Illinois, fixed expenses have been outpacing revenue by an estimated $30 million a day. Can you imagine? He also pointed out that the state's backlog of unpaid bills is $10.7 billion, and it'll hit $13.5 billion next summer. So who's to blame? Well, I say all of them. But Kristen seems to be madder at the Democrats, and Eric seems to be madder at the Republicans. Here is part of our Mincing Rascals podcast.
Eric is throwing around numbers. We do, too. I do all the time. But I cannot emphasize enough that when we talk about a budget, we're not just talking about numbers on paper, and we want to see, you know, spending and revenue match up, because that's just the way, I mean, it is supposed to be that way via the Constitution. But these are promises in the budget that are made to nonprofit organizations and elderly people and the disabled population, everybody who relies on the state for government. There is a promise made to them in the pages of these budgets. That's why it is important to pass a balanced budget, because all these people are waiting, or you what the Democrats continue to do. You pass a budget that's way out of balance, knowing that you are not going to have the money to pay for the promises that are within those pages.
And where Kristen and I differ is I think that, I mean, the governor has a 44-point turnaround agenda. He's got all these reforms that he wants to enact or changes in the law. I don't really care for the word reform. He's got these changes in the law that he wants to enact. And these are outside the budget process. They're things like he wants term limits, he wants redistricting reform, and he's holding out for some of these before he agrees to sit down and hammer out taxes and spending with the Democrats. He's using that as leverage. I think it is past time for him to sort of set those aside. And I know it's getting rid of some of whatever leverage he has, but that leverage he has is just being twisted onto the very people that Kristen was just talking about, you know, the elderly, the disabled, the developmentally challenged, and so on. It's just time for them to say, okay, we will deal with workers' compensation law. We will deal with redistricting. We'll deal with term limits. We will deal with property tax freezes, all the things that are sort of top on this list after we do this budget. But if
you think they'll do that?
Well,
you trust Madigan and Cullerton.
The Democrats have to do that. The Democrats have to agree to entertain.
They
these
haven't for
bills.
2 years. They won't even give it a vote.
The problem is that Rauner is set up. I think he doesn't really know how this works. The idea of horse trading in budget negotiations is certainly common, but what's not common, and what they did here, when they backed the Democrats into a corner, saying we will not do this until you give in on some points on this of Rauner's agenda. And it's basically hostage taking. And if the Democrats agree, like, okay, now, okay, because you've twisted our arm, we're going to go along with these three items that you want. And then, so what stops them next year from saying, okay, now you gave me those three items.
He was elected to reform government. And these are not reforms that the Democrats wholly oppose, like workers' comp. You say he has a 44-point turnaround agenda. He did. Now it's down to about three or four items. Do you even know what those are and specifically what they would do? Do you?
I know it's property tax. Tax freeze, workers' compensation.
What does workers' compensation reform mean? What does he want to do?
Well, he wants to lower the causation, right? He wants to change the standard of when an injury is compensable for a worker, as I understand it. I don't think there's not actually a.
There are six pieces of legislation, and the one that he wants, yes, just it is a tinkering around the edges. That Democrats have heard from their small business owners, too, that they need this because the insurance costs that they're paying are much higher in this state than in other states. It sets a causation standard. You have to have a higher standard to prove that your injury occurred on the job. And I just spoke to a business owner last week who hired someone who 2 weeks out of the job claimed he got a hernia while working in this construction industry. And the construction industry is what we're mostly talking about here. He never had to prove that the injury actually occurred on the job. They found out later that he had this injury previously and it was on his medical records, but we don't have a standard that allows employers to use that kind of information. This dragged on for 3 years. The company had to continue to pay him disability and being off work time and legal fees and everything else. And I think they ended up having to pay, you know, most of his medical costs, all because we don't have this same standard. So what does that small business owner do the next time he wants to hire someone? The reason I'm going into this is because I don't feel like these issues really get talked about. People in the media throw out this is anti-union, this is anti-business, when really, if you dig into it and you talk to people who are affected by this, Democrats would get on board with a causation standard. It is the leadership that is beholden to the trial lawyers who make a lot of money off of these medical settlements who won't allow a vote on the floor. All of this stuff is actually not that radical. But if you believe the Democratic talking points, you would think that Rauner is out there trying to bust the unions.
I think he is out to bust the unions. I think philosophically he's very much opposed to the unions. But beyond that, but it does need to be considered, I think, not in the context of this hostage negotiation.
Why do you keep using the word hostage? That's what the Democrats call it. It's not hostage. Rauner was elected by a majority of the people in Illinois to implement a lot of these things, to allow a vote on term limits and redistricting reform. And if Rauner just what they basically want him to do is agree to an unbalanced budget with a big tax hike and then trust that these two guys in charge are going to take up these other issues. Why in the world would he give in to that? And by the way, budget negotiations over the past 25 years always include non-budget items. We built a new stadium for the Chicago Bears. We rejiggered the Chicago Park District makes up its board. I mean, the negotiations always include stuff that is outside the realm of the little piece of paper that the budget is.
But never
on.
In the context of an ultimatum. That was, I mean, that's where Rauner
well,
that's, is inexperienced.
You're viewing it at your view. Why are you using the word ultimatum?
Because it is. He won't sit down and do a budget. Rauner has never given them. John is sitting there going, what am I started here?
I know. I'm sorry, John. But Rauner
came out and said he's not going to do what the Constitution demands that he do, which is like give us.
The legislature hasn't passed a balanced budget in a decade.
The Constitution requires the governor to submit to the General Assembly a budget proposal in which revenues and expenditures balance.
He's done that twice, Eric. I know that this is a point of contention with you, and you won't go on the. I don't know why we keep going down this path.
It's pixie dust, though. When his balanced budget.
So what else do you have? What else you got? The legislature has passed unbalanced budgets for as long as I've been covering Springfield.
Well, I guess realistically, we all know that Mike Madigan does not want to vote for a tax increase. He doesn't want to put his entire caucus behind a tax increase, a unilateral. He wants
Why
it
not?
To be bipartisan. He wants
Why?
Because he knows that the next election cycle he'll get attacked.
They didn't lose a single seat in 2011 when they passed the income tax. They gained seats. The Democrats picked up seats after a 67% largest income tax increase passed without a single Republican vote in 2011. Again, like, why do you keep buying into these arguments? Challenge them. Why not? You have a supermajority. Why do you insist on getting Republicans on board? Do it.
Well, they don't have a supermajority anymore.
Well, they don't.
No, but Eric, do you see the point? Why doesn't Mike Madigan, couldn't he lead the Democrats to meet the governor on some of these what sound like relatively small points to me with Kristen? Couldn't he just say, look, guys, we'll survive this. Let's give them these two or three points.
I think he should have. I mean, I think that this all should have been done before the negotiations got to the point where they are now. Right now, they're both in their corners.
It's Eric Zorn and his friend, I promise, Kristen McQuarrie, and me, John Williams. I thought I was particularly good in that segment. We'll pause here and then come back and just play a clip for you of our Thomas Jefferson show, because we're going to broadcast this on Thanksgiving. And every time I hear Thomas Jefferson, every time you listen to one of these podcasts that we do with him, I go like this. Oh, good. That's coming up on WGN. So on Thanksgiving afternoon, I don't know where you're going to be, but you'll be able to hear one of our annual conversations with Thomas Jefferson, and this will be a tonic. This will be dessert. You will really enjoy how much fun, how much humor, and how much wisdom we heard. We're playing back part of it on Thursday afternoon. And here's just a little sample of that. Thomas Jefferson says that we should all be people of the earth.
That's my ideal, and I believe that the American experiment would succeed if we stayed in that phase of our life. In my time, 97% of us were farmers. So think of that, 97% of the American people were self-sufficient farmers in my time. In your time, it's under 1%. When we begin to crowd into cities, which are so many open sores on the face of the landscape, farewell happiness and farewell liberty. I'm told, and I'm not sure that I can believe it, that a day or so ago you had the seventh largest gathering of humans.
Go Cubs! You know about the Cubs, right?
I hope this involved opera or theater or science or something That's worthy of human joy.
Yeah, it was. It was an opera. It was awesome.
But the seventh largest gathering, if true, first of all, I would be anywhere but that city. I'm not a person who likes crowds. I'm happiest alone in a room with a plain sheet of a very high-quality paper and a quill pen.
You wouldn't stand a chance today running. I mean, you just have to be such a public character. We're 3 days before we vote here. Tell me how you campaigned then.
When I agreed very reluctantly to stand for the presidency in 1800, and not wishing that office, an office which I called splendid misery, I only agreed to do it because my closest friend, Mr. Madison, told me that I must. We both felt that the Federalist Party, the party of Hamilton and John Adams and Fisher King and Timothy Pickering and George Washington, that party of men were all great men, but but that they were taking the country in the wrong direction, towards monarchy, towards a strong central government, to excise taxes, to a world of military glory. The states' rights were being swallowed up. That vision is entirely the opposite of what I had in mind for this country. And in my time, it was opposite to what most people wanted from the United States. Most people just wanted to live on their farm and be left alone. And so Madison knew that somebody of some charisma had to be the next candidate. And I mean no disrespect, but he had no charisma. He was just a little shriveled up philosopher. His wife Dolly, who was one of the most extraordinary women of our time, called him the great little Madison. He dressed in black. He was what the word dour represents. And so he said, you must be the candidate. I did not wish to. He would have been better. He's more political than I am. I'm not really a political creature. I always regarded myself as sort of detached from that world. I find politics exceedingly disagreeable. You know, one person says the bridge must go here or it's the death of the planet. And then the other party says, no, it must go here or that's the death of the planet. And people then, they surrender their own independence of character to some party line of some sort or other. And they fight over nothing. They create artificial quarrels. Or worse, that they're dividing up the loaves and the fishes, and it's just all greed and self-regard. And so that whole world gives me a kind of a migraine. So when he finally prevailed upon me, I said, I'll stand for this office on one condition, that I need make no public appearances whatsoever. And I didn't. And so during the campaign of 1800, which has been called one of the most vituperative in American history, I never made a campaign appearance or gave a speech. I never asked for a vote. I never asked for a campaign contribution. I never left Monticello. I just stayed there and waited for the people to decide in all of their sobriety whether they preferred me or John Adams. And they knew that Adams stood for more government and I stood for less, and Adams tilted towards Britain and I tilted towards France.
And then I believe history teaches us the FBI then looked into some of your email.
Thanksgiving Day, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Where will you be between 2 and 4 on Thanksgiving? Maybe in front of a TV or a table, but if you're near a radio or a phone, you can catch our conversation with Thomas Jefferson. We're getting real close to Northwestern Wildcat football. That's coming up on WGN.